Welcome into DC On Screen, your guide to the DC Universe properties on film and television. I am your host, David C. Robertson, and this, the man who secretly dances like Buffalo Bill to Bananarama, Jason Goss.
You better believe it. Hi.
This is episode 240, our first exclusively DC TV news episode. And we started off with Gotham, who has just cast, or which has just cast, Selina Kyle's mother, Ivana Milicevic, will play Maria Kyle, a woman who seems to have passed on her street smarts to her daughter. She's a drifter who is rarely found in the same place on a regular basis, and she has cultivated multiple identities so that she can get anywhere at a moment's notice. Maria lives on the wrong side of the law, but she does have one quality that is entirely straightforward: love for her daughter. Despite abandoning Selina to life alone on the streets, yeah, it sounds like love, Maria counts her daughter as the only person alive whom she truly loves. The role is recurring. We'll probably see a lot of her. Ivana Milicevic, I don't know her for much. I remember her from one guest episode on Seinfeld 20 years ago.
So, not a clue on her. Sorry.
Yeah.
Not by name, at least. And
very tall, very leggy.
Yeah, fair enough. If I saw her, I might have a chance. But oftentimes, you're telling me things in the news, and I got nothing on this one. But it does sound like a lot of fun to have. It's a decent profile for her mom. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she was really good on Seinfeld. That's what I remember her from. So she was at a tennis club, and Jerry was attracted to her. And this guy who worked there, Milos, mm-hmm. I think his name was like, oh, you like, he was like obsessed with making Jerry happy. And he's like, oh, you like her. Oh, I'll set it up. And it turns out Milos was her husband. She's like, I cannot do this even for Milos. It was just real weird, but she did a good job. So I'm sure she'll be fine here.
So it barreled into nonsense like a Seinfeld episode.
I refuse to answer that question on the merits of my love for Seinfeld.
It's a tailspin of inanity.
Anyway, sure. Rick Gonzalez posted an Instagram or a Twitter. It was a Twitter. It was a picture he refers to as the Superhero Committee. It was a picture of Ragman, The Flash, James Bamford, Mr. Terrific, Wild Dog, and Supergirl all together. And at this point, I'm okay with James Bamford being considered a superhero with as much as he's directed these stories.
I'll work with him. Yeah.
A lot of stuff about the crossover. We're getting closer,
yes.
Obviously, because a whole bunch of stuff's coming out about that.
Still a few weeks, it edges closer.
Berlanti says they're all going to have their own continuing storylines. It really does feel like in the middle of the season, a three-hour movie. Stephen Amell says that the 100th episode, obviously we know the 100th episode is going to be part of the Invasion crossover, but he says it had to be. He says... the team-up between the shows was emblematic of what Arrow stands for. To me, the 100th episode had to be a crossover. It gives us a chance to do something for the fans that, in the normal course of our season, we would never get to do. Gustin says that the crossover is bigger than last time. We knew that. He says almost everyone interacts with each other at a certain point. They were talking about... Well, Mel says, it's really cool. We had our individual scenes, but then we had scenes where there were like 20 superheroes in this big airplane hangar. And it looked like, and felt like, and I think the fans will feel like, this is a big 3 to 4 hour movie that we're putting on.
Nice.
On how Kara will react to all these other superheroes. I think Kara just wanted to be accepted and be like a part of the cool kids, Benoist said. And I felt the same way. It was so fun to be in this big group setting where everyone... It was like this infectious environment where we all, it felt really cool, but she had good interactions with almost everyone there. Gustin says last year was Flash and Arrow, and now we have 17 characters in multiple scenes, and almost everyone interacts with each other, with every other character at a certain point. So it's huge, huge. They had a lot of conversation about who would win in a fight. Benoist was apparently adamant that Supergirl would be the victor. She says she's got heat vision. She flies. Amell was certain that that Green Arrow would win. He says, I'll let you destroy each other, and then I'll come in and mop up. Berlanti added, you'll see some of that in the crossover.
That's well done. Everybody involved, mm-hmm. Well done there.
Mm-hmm. Over to Supergirl news. It looks like they put out a synopsis for the November 14th episode. It says the Guardian debuts to lend a hand after a parasite alien drains Supergirl of her power. Mon-El considers a less than desirable new career, which then leads him to contemplate his motives. Alex struggles with a new reality. I wonder what that new reality could be.
She may have learned something about herself.
Indeed. But James Olsen will become the Guardian in that episode, so...
So, America, just sit back and admit to yourselves you're not going to love everything. But
some people, Supergirl, that will be their least favorite episode.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care how much you don't like some of the decisions that are happening. Come on, man. It's a charming show. Just deal with it.
Yeah. So, Kevin Smith gave us an update. He has been filming Supergirl. He put up a picture of himself with Melissa Benoist and Kyler Lee, and they're all mouth agape and looking excited. And Kevin says, "This is what your face always looks like when you're working on Supergirl. I spent yesterday working with Melissa Benoist and Kyler Lee as my favorite siblings on TV, the Danvers sisters. I love all the flying and punching of villains on Supergirl, but I tune in for portrayals of sibling revelry so sincere and supportive that it really makes me feel like I missed out on something in life by not being a girl with a sister. As a huge fan of the show, seeing that dynamic on display both on and off camera yesterday was like drinking insanely good hot cocoa that warms your insides and fills you with joy. And on top of that, yesterday was my first day shooting the super suit. It is as glorious in real life as it looks on the show, and the cape is heavy, not just metaphorically speaking, but also simply weight-wise. Mimi and Kai Kai brought the major feels when we were rolling, but between takes, they're both legit funny. It's cool watching them go from goofing around before action is called to delivering dire dialogue about impending universal doom. Nice, nice kids. The whole damn crew is full of nice, talented kids. We shot nearly 8 pages yesterday, but managed to wrap 40 minutes early. Tonight is shoot day 3 of 9, which includes watching the amazing FX and stunt folks on this show flip a speeding car. Up, up, and away."
Nice.
Eric Carrasco, who's a writer on Supergirl this year, he just got the job, was talking to Kevin Smith about how he got the writing job. So several days ago, while giving a tour of the DEO set, Kevin Smith was talking to this guy, and who's actually working on the this tonight's Survivors episode. That's what he worked on that. And he also worked on the Supergirl Lives episode that Kevin is doing. And he tells the story of how he got the job. He says, "So I'm in the meeting with Andrew Kreisberg. And I go, 'Who was in the pod at the end of season one?' And Andrew says, 'Who do you think was in the pod?' And this is the test. And I know it's the test."
So he puts me on the spot.
So he puts me on the spot. I rattle off a bunch of things. Can you use Green Lantern characters? Can you use Sodom Yacht? Can you use this? It could be a Legion thing. And I finish with, or just go the easy route and maybe it's Mon-El. Yeah, I got there the first day and he goes, "You get a gold star. That's why we hired you. Was because of the piece of trivia. You figured out what we were going to do with the pod all along.
Go the easy route."
So he says, "My wasted life was not a waste."
Now, bear in mind, I've got no problem with Mon-El as the final solution to that problem, but, you know, I'm always going to love one Crypto.
I think it's funny that him being a writer on the show,
which, by the way, I acknowledge is absolutely stupid that I want Crypto in that pod. Just to put it out there.
That's okay.
I understand, and I know, and...
It's better than Streaky the Super Cat.
That's fair. That's entirely fair. But I get how stupid I'm being, and good job. Good job on him spotting Mon-El.
Yeah, I know. Like, I like that he, still being a writer on the show, like, he's got to go back and be like, admit that his thought was, or you can go the easy route and make it Mon-El.
Right.
Like, he just called out his entire writer room for going the easy route.
Right.
Yeah, we caught that.
Yep.
We caught that, Eric.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Andy Poon has released more alternate Jesse Quick costume designs, as well as stuff for Ragman and Kid Flash and Hourman. If you're not following that cat on Instagram, I've said it the last couple weeks, probably.
Dude's all over the place.
Go check that guy out. He's all over the place, and he does a really good job. Rick Kosnick was talking to comicbook.com. He wants to play a villain. He wants to come back on The Flash and play a villain. He says, I mean, there's nothing better than playing someone who's a little bit evil and who you've seen where he comes from. I think that's what was exciting about Eddie. We've seen him be so good, and when you see someone turn evil through jealousy, you know, we've all got this bad and evil side. Eddie really just chose to be to constantly be good. He always rose above everything, and he never really got jealous. He was such a good man in that sense. From that, to have someone so diabolically evil would be so exciting and so cool to be able to play. They asked if he would ever return to The Flash permanently. And he says, definitely. I can't say exactly where, but there is definitely a big chance that I could be in this new timeline. You'll just have to wait and see.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
That would mess me up. Nothing against the actor. And I like the fact that he wants to play an evil guy. I even dig his reasoning. But they haven't covered. Have they covered whether Eddie was around in this timeline?
They haven't said.
So then you have two possibilities, neither of which I would like. One, he was around, and, oh my god, my old love, while I'm trying to make the new love with Barry. Mm-hmm. And two, somebody that she's just preternaturally attracted to, which would be equally boring, and actually probably more boring.
Mm.
Because guy that I've never seen before that I love so much, because it would really make a story go, versus guy that at least I've seen before, been engaged to... timeline, blah, 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 blah.
Well, maybe she was engaged to him and wound up leaving him because of her feelings for Barry, which triggers his evil nature, and he never dies, which is why Eobard Thawne is still around.
I think they could still work that in, which would be okay.
Womp, womp. I don't know.
But then it's only okay for a few episodes, because then it's just, spurned lover.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Who gained superpowers, which is like a one-episode arc, honestly.
Nah. I mean... You say that, but...
you can make it more. And,
you can... I'm not trying to
minimize... I'm not trying to minimize that guy's impact. He was good. He was really good.
He was good. Yeah.
So, if they did...
He was so good, half the time I felt like he should have been Barry Allen. No disrespect to Grant Gustin. He just looks the part a lot more.
Also, you've really focused on the blonde hair sometimes.
I know. But he was really good.
He was really good. And he could have pulled off Barry Allen, I think. So, no disrespect to him, I just, they,
Yeah, no. Hey, you know, no disrespect to Sam Jones, who played Pete Ross on Smallville, but the dude that played Whitney on Smallville was totally Pete Ross from the comics. Like, he looked exactly like him, and acted like him. He was a dick. Pete Ross and Clark were kind of dicks back in the day.
Yeah.
Let's be fair, Clark's most of the time been a dick in the comics, a little bit, until he becomes, like... He's actually in Metropolis, and like Clark is his secret identity. He's like, oh, I'm fumbling in there around now, and such a nice Midwestern boy.
Young Clark,
Superman,
though,
be the dick now.
What an asshole.
In the Golden Age, he was, especially.
Even in the movies. Did you see what he did to that one guy's fence? It's $50 worth of damage. Jesus. And at least 45 minutes.
All right. So the question has been tossed about, and we haven't gotten the answer yet because we're recording this Monday night instead of Tuesday night. But is Earth 19 Harrison Wells evil, a.k.a. HR? Is he evil? We don't know. But Grant Gustin had this to say. Tom Cavanaugh is playing a new version of Wells, which has presented an opportunity for a lot of comedy, more so than in the past. Which makes me kind of feel like I thought, it's a red herring. I don't know. Maybe he will be evil.
sure.
When asked when Savitar will show up on The Flash, Grant Gustin said it will be very, very soon. Berlanti added, he's the god of motion, so Flash is up against his biggest foe yet. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited as hell about that.
I like how you phrased that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really fast. They were asked, I'm motion. Oh.
They asked when we will return, or if we'll return to the original timeline. Gustin said, Barry's got a lot of feelings. He's a sensitive guy. He beats himself up, I think, quite a bit. As soon as he starts to realize what the repercussions are, it weighs on him heavily. Berlanti says, I'm not sure that we can return to the original timeline, given what we've established. If we're not challenging ourselves and creating new territory and new obstacles for the characters, I think it's less rewarding to watch and probably less rewarding to play. So we like to grow ourselves and grow our characters. I'm not certain I believe that. I think they will go back to the original timeline.
I think they'll find a way. As he sold it, I could buy it.
I would too, but the only reason I don't is because there was no shot where he put his hand up
You're still waiting for
to
that
bury
last,
and said
that
don't.
Last bury in that iconic moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Because until I see Barry Allen
waving off the person trying to save
current,
his own mother.
Yeah. Current Barry Allen being the Flash that we're watching, waving off a past Barry Allen, I will not believe it's the final timeline. I just won't.
No, and it they may find a way to get that back in and make it meaningful, but they're also kind of doing a thing this season where, man, it's pretty damn close to the show as we mm-hmm. knew it last season. I mean, we're only a few episodes mm-hmm. in, and Cisco's kind of Cisco again, and Caitlin's got her mm-hmm. own thing going on, but it was something that was supposed to be going on, we hope, the whole time.
Right.
So,
yeah. And they could easily make the Caitlin thing a thing that's been slowly happening. I mean,
they could easily make it a thing that even in Earth 1. Well, actually, I take that back. She passed the metahuman wristwatch test.
She could have faked that. She's smart enough.
That's fair. She is. If she saw it coming, but seeing Harrison Wells' technology coming is difficult.
Yeah,
this may be a thing where, like, we have her for a minute and then they go back to the previous timeline and she's back to Caitlin.
But remember, they've already set that up with Wally, too, where they're like, well, a lot of people didn't, you know, they still have exhibited powers, but they still could.
Yeah, you have this latent meta mm-hmm. skill that might or might not show up, mm-hmm. depending on the whim of our season.
Mm-hmm. So, talking about the crossover and the 100th episode, on Arrow, Stephen Amell says, I do get to punch an alien, but not in the 100th episode of Arrow.
I just like the fact that he focused on, I do get to punch an alien.
Right? As I've said, there's a lot of returning guest stars. There are no flashbacks, apparently. A lot of people are returning in what Amell calls a very unexpected spot at a very, very retrospectively expected time.
You're going to get your Tommy.
I think I'm going to get a little Tommy.
We're all going to get a little Tommy.
Amell does talk about how the 100th episode begins. He says the 100th episode of Arrow begins in a very appropriate way. It begins with Oliver running. We've had him running into the premiere almost every year. We didn't have him running in this year, but we have him running in the 100th episode. He also talks about Dolph Lundgren and Alicity a little bit. He says, Dolph brings a different energy to the show. The first time we meet him, it just feels different, even the way it's shot. He says he's a fan of the 1980s Lundgren action movies. He says he's thrilled to get to fight him on Arrow. He says, I mean, come on. also talking about Alicity, we haven't really discussed our relationship this season, but Oliver and Felicity discuss a little bit about the relationship and where it is in this week's episode, Berlanti says. That was Amell. Berlanti elaborated, obviously they work together every week. They're very close. I can't imagine anyone that would ever be in either of their lives that would replace the other person.
Nice.
But I don't mean they're going to get together again, so cool your tits. Anyway, Oliver is apparently going to be wearing the season one costume again this year.
Yeah, I can't figure out where that's going to... Yeah, I mean, it's got to be, well, I think. I can't figure out anywhere else it should go.
Yeah, he put up a picture of himself in the old costume with the caption, "Hello, old friend." And everyone commented saying that they dug the throwback post, and he goes, that was last week.
Oh, wow.
He says, I have to wear the season one suit this year for reasons I'm not going to disclose. He said that when the wardrobe department called him for a fitting, he insisted that his body hadn't changed since season one. And that he would only come in if Maya Manny, the costume designer, put him in the suit from the season one finale. And he said they did, and it fit like a glove.
I do believe him, and the only outside shot I've got, the outside, like, let's just see what happens, is if they do mm-hmm. some sort of weird, time is changing and it affects him, and he sees himself in several variations, kind of.
Maybe. But, you know, it's the 100th episode, so I don't know. I don't know what they're going to.
When they said no flashbacks, blah, 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 blah. But mm-hmm. I'm going to throw that out there just in case I'm right about it. A quick look through of his possible timelines and previous ones and so on.
Interesting. So we're going to talk about how Diggle is going to be handling the Flashpoint changes. Specifically, how he deals with the fact that he has a daughter that's gone now and a son that he didn't have before due to Barry. How he'll handle the revelation. David Ramsey says, much more compassionately than you might think, Diggle can't miss anything he's never had. and Flashpoint changes history. It changes his history directly. So he never can really miss baby Sarah, because he never had her. But he is concerned about Barry. Barry's actions were reckless, and with all that power, being reckless to someone as disciplined as Diggle comes as a shock.
I like that. That makes the most sense. If he had started mourning someone he had never known, I would have been a little perturbed.
Mm-hmm. So Wendy Miracle was asked if Susan Williams from the Green Lantern mythology, who was going to be on Arrow, was chosen specifically for her connection to Green Lantern. And Miracle says, one of the fun parts of the show is that you can put these characters in, and the Easter eggs and the fans that know this universe so well respond to it on varying levels of excitement and whatnot. But the thing about her character that's so intriguing is that it operates on that level. It also operates because she's someone who's very intrigued by Oliver, who's going to uncover some secrets that Oliver has, which is going to be really fun, and is a fun nod to the Green Lantern, who obviously we could never bring on the show.
Huh.
However, it was pointed out that they had said that like they were never going to do aliens or magic or anything. And Wendy Miracle says that is 100% true. I mean, really, season six and on, all bets are off, right?
She is as practiced a liar as Guggenheim.
So she's also talking about the crossover.
I'll give her points for this. Both of them, really. They'll say things because they don't think they can get away with it. I feel like this is the narrative when it comes down to it. Mm-hmm. They'll say things because surely we'll never get away with that, and then you do. And you take advantage of that opportunity. Oh, we'll never be able to actually do this thing. Oh my God, we can do this thing. And of course you do that thing.
Absolutely. So she was asked, the big crossover between the CW's four DC TV shows will have aliens and metahumans, but Arrow Season 5 has really been about getting back to basics and street-level violence. How did you balance those two aspects in your approach to the 100th episode? Wendy says, you really nailed the essential question of this episode, and also it's the 100th, and we wanted it to be very nostalgic and very much about the DNA of Arrow, of the show when it started. We feel really lucky. We found a way to balance the fact that we do now live in a world where there are metas and there are aliens. Berlanti came up with this brilliant way of accomplishing that and making it very much a love letter to the fans and to the show.
Dominators.
I guess. In an earlier interview, you said Arrow would be reinvented after season six. What do you envision for the show, for the future of the show? Wendy says, I did. I think it's an excellent question. I think that we've closed a chapter here in seasons 1-5, and it's very much been about Oliver looking back at his legacy and his family and where he's from. I think season six and onward is going to be him thinking about who he is and where he's going. Where does he go from here? And he has got a whole new team of people now to work with, and I think that will be a big part of it as well. What would you call Oliver's legacy now that he has this whole new team? She says, this idea that really attracted to me to the show was this idea that Oliver Queen speaks for people who have no voice. And I think ultimately, when Oliver looks back at what he's done, that's what his biggest legacy will be, that there are people in the city that don't have a voice and that don't have power and don't have the abilities that the Green Arrow has, and he's their defender. He's the one who speaks for them. On whether or not Oliver's going to get more involved in politics, he's going to grow into being the mayor, and I think the thing that's interesting is we've had Oliver try so many different jobs, CEO, various positions that he more or less could blow off. I think the thing about being a politician, which really does speak to these ideals and that he holds, I think he's going to engage it, and I think he's going to become more intrigued by the power and the possibility of what that role will have for him. Thea is really running the show for Oliver right now. Are we going to see her step back a little? Wendy says she's kind of running the show right now. She might be running it in 5 years. No, I think Thea has found a place in this that also honors her legacy and speaks to her trying to do something for her whole family. But Oliver is the mayor. He was the one who was elected. And I think for the first few episodes of the season, he's really enamored with this idea of, oh, well, I could be much more effective as Green Arrow than I can as the mayor. So that's going to change. on whether or not there are corners of the DC universe that they haven't touched yet that she would like to, she says, I think so. I'd really like to see some strong female supervillains on the show. I don't know who we would want to get. There's such an embarrassment of riches in that respect in the DCU, but that's something I would definitely love to do. The interviewer says, well, Ruvé Adams was a very effective villain. And Wendy says, she was a badass. She was great. I agree. But I'd like to use someone like, I don't know, Poison Ivy, a Batman villain who would be amazing. Someone in that vein, but someone in the Green Arrow universe would be fantastic. We've seen some Batman villains on the show, like Ra's al Ghul. Is there any chance we could get someone from another DC pantheon? And Wendy says there's always a chance. You know, it's one of those things where if you, the story presents itself, you never know. We really want to bring Huntress back.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering if they'd do that.
And she says they would love to bring Huntress into Team Arrow. She's fantastic, but again, it's always about whether it's right for the direction or whether it's right for the story at that point in the series. Yeah. So, I don't know. I'd be completely down for seeing Huntress back. I just thought all of that was interesting. That was, that and this.
Did a good Huntress, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And I like a lot of the take that she's got on this. Him being the voice for people who can't do what he can do is, it seems extremely Green Arrow.
Mm-hmm. And that interviewer, and for the upcoming thing I'm about to talk about, is Megan D'Amore, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Some really good questions. It's too bad Wendy Miracle's a liar. sure, she's very nice.
Damn her answers.
Right. You know. All right, so... again, Megan D'Amore was talking to Paul Blackthorne. Megan says, now that he has a job within Oliver's office, will Quentin be able to get a handle on his drinking? Paul says, oh, I don't know. You'd think he'd want to behave responsibly, being that he's deputy mayor now, you know? Put the bottle down, give it a break, but I don't know. Who knows? God knows. We'll see.
That's fantastic. Actually, that sounds like the internalized answer of an actual alcoholic. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what would you say is Diane?
Seems totally like this should be in hand, and we'll see.
Yeah. Megan says, what would you say his dynamic is with Thea now that she's done him this huge favor? He says, well, it's interesting because she has this rather strange father situation, and I have my desperate daughter situation, and there definitely seems to be a bit of role replacement going on in there somewhere. It's interesting because we talked about it in the scenes and neither of us sort of realized. We both felt the characters wouldn't realize that was happening for quite a long time. It's not like, oh, she feels like my daughter. It's quite unspoken. But of course, it does certainly feel like that. It's like, I recognize this feeling, but it's with somebody else. It's been interesting playing on that dynamic with her. Megan says, now, Quentin does have a living daughter. And he says, she just doesn't come home too much.
No, he never knows when he's going to see her, so he's always going to have that right. gap in his life, and that's perfect right now, because they've just reversed roles. I like that they're talking about the fact that this might kind of come full circle, but I've talked about it before, like where those characters were versus where they were when she offered him that job.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying she offered him a job is, if all you'd seen is the first few episodes of season one, you can't believe we're going to get there.
Yeah. So Megan asks Paul, are you going to be a part of this 100th episode? He says, yes. Oh, then are you going to cross paths with Sarah, perchance? He says, we'll have to wait and see. She says, Quentin has seen some serious shifts in his life. He's seen magic and metahumans and magic. Paul says, no wonder he's drinking. What is his reaction to the latest alien invasion? Paul says he can never quite get his head around what the hell is going on in this world, flummoxed and bemused as ever.
There is going to be, like, him and Diggle that ground us.
Yeah. I want Diggle dropping his fast food and Lance spilling his drink.
Yeah.
On over to Legends of Tomorrow. Katie Lotz is talking a little bit about becoming the leader. You know, she's Captain Lance now, too.
God, she is. I like that.
Yeah, I know. She's
doing
says,
pretty
I think,
well, by the way.
Yeah, she says, I think Sarah has kind of naturally been backseat leader already, but now that it's actually her responsibility, I think it's kind of stressful, because everything's your fault. She's kind of got to get her act together, which I would assume anyway. But it has been confirmed. A lot of fans have been talking about this, and I haven't heard anything about it, and I don't know why, but... A lot of fans were arguing about whether or not there was a stripe helmet in the background of the time lab. And set decorator Matthew Versteeg actually revealed that it is, in fact, the stripe helmet in the time lab of Star and Stripe. So maybe that'll show up on the show at some point, as far as they could actually be seeing that backstory.
a setting, like literally doing a set design like that, you have plenty of opportunities to Constantinus, I'll call it.
Mm-hmm.
Not their fault. The story was cut short, but oh my god, all the characters on those walls?
Yeah. So, over to animation news, Justice League Dark, Jason O'Mara did an interview with Ed Gross of EmpireOnline.com, and there were some fun bits here. Ed asks him, because Jason O'Mara is doing Batman's voice in these movies, and he's also playing the director on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he says, how do you get through your day torn between Marvel and DC? And Jason O'Mara says, it's really not a problem. I mean, the thing is, you know, I've had this DC commitment now for the past couple of years. For me, from my point of view, I go in, I record a Batman movie in one day. I might go back a few months later for another day. Then once it comes out, I'll go and promote it. It's really not a huge commitment in terms of time. Because it's DC and because it's Batman, I think some fans think it's kind of amusing that I'm also playing the director on S.H.I.E.L.D. Listen, The rivalry is a healthy thing. And I think as long as it stays friendly and in the spirit of good fun and people get a kick out of it, then it's great. If you take it too seriously, then that's your problem, essentially.
I completely stand by him there.
What's Batman's role in Justice League Dark? He says it's kind of appropriate to me that Batman is still a part of the Justice League Dark story. I think it would be strange if any of the other Justice League characters were involved in putting together this kind of motley crew of dead people and mediums and ghosts and demons and phantoms. Batman should be in the middle of that. He's very skeptical, though. He's very skeptical about magic. It's all nonsense to him. He's the smartest superhero ever, as far as I can make out, and he's smart enough to know he's going to need help with this seemingly unsolvable mystery, these demons, and why some people can see them and some people cannot. That help comes to him through a tip from Deadman, which is that he basically needs to get in touch with John Constantine. Then, once Batman gets Constantine involved, it's really Constantine's movie. Batman is there to sort of hold his hand, if you like. Constantine takes the focus, but that's good for Batman. Those are the situations where Batman comes alive.
That sounds fantastic.
And Ed Gross says, when he has a little more distance from everybody else. And Jason says, exactly, a little more distance. I don't think Batman should spend a whole movie yapping, you know? He should choose his words carefully and speak low.
Yes.
Gravelly. Yeah, the graveliness. Is that a word? It is now, I guess. That distance actually frees Batman up to have a bit of a sense of humor about the whole thing. I guess when you're as dark as Batman, the only way is the other way. He gets the opportunity to be a little lighter this time.
It must be fun to... for him, for a character like Batman in these movies, it must be fun for him to watch somebody else start a team.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't distrust the fact that there's magic. He just would distrust each member's capacity. Like his best friend / greatest colleague is susceptible to magic.
Yeah.
He understands. It's just, you know, he's going to want to see it.
Well, like, at this point, this is like New 52 universe. So.
If you pull a rabbit out of a hat, it's not going to cut it.
This is still New 52 universe, though, where Batman hasn't really dealt a lot with magic at this point.
We still met Zatanna, and Superman's still susceptible, though, right?
Well, yeah, I just don't know if he's had a lot of ability to see Superman be affected by it in this line of movies.
Man, I have enough.
I mean, personally,
fine, but I mean, that should be enough.
As far as I know, my Batman, my favorite Batman, no magic to some degree. Like, either, you know. they're palling around with, you know, Jason Blood.
Right.
See, I'll skip around a little bit. You've voiced Batman a number of times at this point. Do you find there is an opportunity for the character to evolve? Or is he kind of locked into place as to who he is? Jason says, this is the New 52 universe, which is supposed to mean there are 52 parallel realities in the DC multiverse. So clearly, there are all different kinds of Batmans. My Batman is not involved with the Killing Joke Batman or the Arkham video game Batman. And there are other versions of Batman. This version of Batman I play, he's a dad. Nightwing has graduated the Batcave and left the mantle for Damian to become Robin. He just put the Justice League together in Justice League War. Now he's got this other team of dark guys. He sent Damian to train with the Teen Titans, almost like a boarding school. That's the Batman that we're exploring in this. It's nice to have a kind of Batman that isn't the I work alone, I'm darkness, I am the night kind of thing. This version of Batman has all of this very specific emotional baggage. I don't think we could ever just ignore any of that. If we continue with this Batman, I think we will be continuing to tell stories in that vein. To me, it would be unfair to this Batman to go a different route, because we have Kevin Conroy for that. I mean, that darker kind of standalone Batman is Kevin Conroy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm kind of the Batman who's got this family baggage. And I see what he's saying there, because even when Kevin Conroy's Batman in the animated series did slowly grow that family, he became more distant, almost.
Yeah, he felt like he had to protect them by distancing himself and challenging them.
Mm-hmm. And that's also a Batman that never had a Damian.
Yes.
This
is kind of neat, though. It's you're focusing right? on the mentor aspect. Like, he didn't focus on the I have to do everything alone. He focused on the I can expand what like my mission statement essentially by being a mentor.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I like O'Mara's take on that. I like that he's the Batman with family baggage. I like that he differentiated between his version and Kevin Conroy's version for that.
And
that was a neat take.
Yeah, did it cogently. That's well done.
Mm-hmm. See, O'Mara, you are the Batman. You made me think about something I never thought about the way that you said it. Like looking back at Batman the Animated Series on through Justice League and going, oh my God, he's right. Kevin didn't have a family.
No,
Kevin was a sensei. It seems
like him with Ace even more poignant, because he mm-hmm. didn't have connections, and then he had a connection, and it was tragic. And
yeah,
it was it was the kind of story that when you tell it and tell it the way they did, it was fantastic. But this is another kind of story, and focusing on it sounds like, yeah, he's got a good grip on what to focus on.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, God, that's good. I mean, looking back on it, you know, I mean, obviously there was always that feeling there for me when I look back at Return of the Joker and things like that, like saying like, oh, look at this. They, you know, he's that distant father figure. He could never quite let them in all the way. But now it turns into he was looking at this like he was a sensei, and mm-hmm. they were looking for a father, but what they got was a sensei. That's pretty dope, man.
Yeah.
Anyway. So that's all. That's all my news.
All the newses?
That's all the newses.
Aw.
For DCTV.
All right. Well, I appreciate everyone's listening, and you've been properly newsed.
You have been newsed real good.
Mm-hmm. Newsed quite right.
Thank you so much for listening to DC On Screen. You can find every episode at DCOnScreen.com. We are on Facebook and Twitter at DC On Screen. One word. You can contact the show by emailing us. I'm going to screw up one word at least. One word at least every time. You can contact the show by emailing us.
That's why we love you. You're human. We relate to you.
Yeah, I'm relatable. Look at how relatable I am. I screw up everything.
Look at all my relatable mistakes.
Email us at dconscreen@gmail.com, or you can get with us on Facebook and Twitter if you want to. That's fine.
About
or
DC if you just stuff want to talk to or me. All of our mistakes.
Yeah. And you know what? If you dig Star Trek or anything else, like some goofy thing, like, you know, shit, I don't know. If you want to talk to me about Marvel shit, hit me up on Twitter, David C. Robertson.
I've
been doing a whole bunch of stuff. And I got words. I got things to say about this Brian Fuller stepping down as the showrunner of Star Trek Discovery.
I'm angry, buddy. I know you do.
I'm angry and relieved, and I don't know how to feel.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, thanks for listening. We'll be back with more reviews, recaps, and reviews of this week's news. I mean, of this week's episodes, and then next week's news. You know what I'm saying? Things. We'll be back.
The post news. Until the free news. The happening news. The news that's been. The news,
man,
that's old.
This is what,
the news that will be is, news.
This is what happens when I don't write things down.
Extra, extra.
Listen all about it. Oh, also, if you guys dig Batman the Animated Series, and how could you not, our good friend Matt from the MCU cast, he gave me the new Batmobile, the deluxe set with the Bat Signal and the Batman and Robin, and just full-scale Batmobile. It's really awesome. We put up a video of it. It's on our Facebook. It's on our website as a post. So you can go check that. We do an unboxing video. Matt and I do an unboxing video for it. See you guys later. Keep some DC
sweet
under screen.
As both a gesture and a thing with him. That was
it
was
is
a fine.
Very
thing.
Nice, very nice. But I gush over him in that video so much. It's just, let's just keep it professional here. In the video, as I'm talking, you can kind of see like my eye twitching a little bit because I'm about to cry. I'm like, I'm at the Batmobile.
Oh my God, it's the thing. I understand.
Anyway, guys, until next time, keep some DC on your screen.